Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Doug Wortham. I have the distinct pleasure of spending some time with you today. On today's show, we're going to have a conversation with the Community Relations Officer for the Minnesota National Guard. Then we'll check in with the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs and hear about the Field Operations Team. And finally, we'll round out the show hearing from the President of the Minnesota Association of County Veteran Service Officers. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Sean Mankey.
According to the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, almost 30 people a day are killed in drunk driving crashes. That's one person every 50 minutes. The Minnesota National Guard relies on the health and fitness of its soldiers and airmen to achieve success. That's why it is important to have a plan in place if you decide to drink alcohol. Rideshare apps like Uber and Lyft are an efficient and affordable way to avoid having to drive while impaired. If that doesn't work for you, be sure to have a sober driver on call to take you home. And if all else fails, be prepared to sleep on a couch or floor. That's a better alternative than spending the night in jail. If you have to ask yourself if you're okay to drive, you already know the answer. Please don't drink and drive.
Thank you, General Mankey. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining me in the studio is Captain Kristen Ort. Captain Ort enlisted in 2007, served as a military police officer with the 34th MPs, and then deployed in 2021 after receiving a commission in 2012. I should point that out, too. So in 2021, deployed to Kuwait in support of Operation Spartan Shield and is currently the company commander of Gulf Company 134th Brigade Support Battalion. And on the full-time side in the Minnesota National Guard, serves as the Public Affairs Community Relations Officer. Captain Ort, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you, Doug. I'm glad to be here.
So did I get most of that correct?
Yes, absolutely.
All right. So 34th MP Company. I was an MP, so we've got that going for us. So I like you already. And let's just hear a little bit about your career, though. Why'd you join the Minnesota National Guard, and then ultimately what led you to the position you're in right now?
So I decided to join because I wanted the education benefits, for one thing. I was going to go to college and become an officer. That was my overall goal going into the military, and also kind of proved to everyone, like, hey, I can do this. So if I can do it, anyone else could pretty much do it, because I had a lot of naysayers back in the day. I've worked now as a logistics officer, and so I do a lot of coordination with people and moving of things, you know, to support missions. So public affairs was kind of my, like, next thing that I wanted to move into, because I just loved seeing, like, the messaging they were able to do and the stories they were telling about our service members. So I wanted to be a part of that.
And so then the opportunity came about. So how long have you been full-time with the Minnesota National Guard?
So I have been a technician now for the last 2 years now.
Okay. Yeah. So you had a good chunk of your career as what we would call an M-Day or a traditional soldier. So you're serving that one weekend a month, 2 weeks a year, cough, cough, right? Minimum amount of service. And then you had the opportunity to go on full time. And you saw that as in the public affairs department. So you've been there for a couple of years now. And did you get hired right into the community relations officer position? Or is that something that just came about?
Yeah. So I actually was coming back from deployment, and I was kind of looking out for career opportunities, and I saw that this position had opened up. And so I took the chance and applied for it, because I've been wanting to get into the public affairs sector somehow. And I was like, community relations, that's right up my alley, you know.
Yeah.
Planning events, you know, coordinating with people and just having a good time with people and networking. So it was right up my alley. I decided to apply, and kind of I got lucky and landed the position.
And so you deployed in support of Operation Spartan Shield, which is actually what the 34th Infantry Division just walked out the door to get ready to do, to take over that mission and inherit resolve. So you got a little bit of experience in understanding what they're going to, especially working in the public affairs department. Whenever you're having to tell those stories, you got some firsthand knowledge. So that must be pretty beneficial for that.
Oh, yeah, I would definitely say so.
So community relations in the Minnesota National Guard, really, what does it mean to be a community relations officer?
So my job is to kind of be that liaison between the National Guard side of things and then making sure that we're able to connect with our communities that we serve in. So we have soldiers all across the, you know, the state, and airmen as well. So we have both of them. And my job is to kind of connect the two and be that liaison. And when organizations or communities are looking for some military support to come out and just be present, my job is to coordinate that for them. So,
and so even though you are a member of the Minnesota Army National Guard, because you are a soldier, in your position, you're supporting both the Army and the Air and trying to tell those stories, make those connections.
Yes.
And now, have you had to kind of go through a steep learning curve so that when you're talking about Air Force stuff, you kind of understand what you're doing over there? How is that?
Yes, there is definitely a learning curve to that, because I am still learning certain terminology that is, you know, making sure to say like soldiers and airmen, you know, that terminology, making sure to include that, because we're not all just soldiers. There are airmen. So,
yeah, I think that's one of the hardest things for many of the leaders in the organization is to get used to bringing that inclusivity into that conversation, right? Because you're so used to whatever branch you're in, always saying soldiers or airmen, but not often putting the two of them together.
Yes, that is so true.
And so, all right, so you make some of these connections. You want to make sure that you're touching each of the communities so people understand what the Minnesota National Guard is, what we have to offer, what we bring to the community. So can you tell us maybe some of the ways in which the Minnesota National Guard supports some of the community events going on?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have the opportunity to request senior leadership to come and speak at events. They'll have to provide remarks for a lot of the events that happen. Especially like Veterans Day and Memorial Day, those are our two highest requested events. We also have the opportunity to provide vehicles for static displays or touch a truck events for, you know, like the younger generations to see and come and check out our equipment. We do flyovers for events as well, so we can coordinate with either the Air Force or with the Army side, and we're able to coordinate those flyovers to support events. Typically, those are with roughly 5,000 or more personnel in attendance to get those ones. And then we also offer the recruiting command as well. They're able to come and support events as well. So we work hand in hand with them as well to support some events too.
And it should be, it should be noted that if someone wanted a senior leader out of the organization to speak, say, at Memorial Day event, they might be behind the power curve right now in making that request, because those requests fill up and the availability is only so much. And, you know, you can't have the adjutant general at every single event. And, you know, he also still needs to, you know, live a personal life. So what kind of advice are you giving to people when they're thinking about bringing someone in for an event?
Yeah, so relatively, I tell everyone that within 90 days of an event that's being requested to have the request forms turned in, we utilize the DD Form 2536, which is a form used to request non-aviation assets. And they just put on there requesting a speaker to come and speak at our event. And this is the event. It gives us the 5 W's of what the event is so that we can tell the senior leadership, like, hey, this is what they're looking for. Can you support this event? Here's when it's happening. But typically 90 days is what I would we hope to get. Some have actually reached out sooner, up to like 6 months out, yeah, just to make sure that they have someone locked in, because they know that, you know, our regular supporters, they know when to send their requests in to us.
So. Yeah, I mean, if you want to get something out of the Minnesota National Guard, a senior leader, a display of vehicles or a flyover, obviously sooner is better than later, as much leeway. You know, because I know that there's still some of the wickets you have to go through to get certain approval based on the event and, you know, what it is that someone's asking for.
Yes.
And so the DD 2536, that form, easily available out on the Minnesota National Guard website. I'm sure there's directions to get there and how to fill it out and who to send it to and all that kind of stuff.
Yes, there is. It's on, if you go into the National Guard's page, we do have a support, request our support tab on the very top. Just click that. It'll bring you to all the forms that we use, to include the DD Form 2536 for non-aviation, the DD Form 2535, which is for requesting aviation assets to come and support, as well as forms for requesting the band and military funeral honors as well.
Okay.
And they're all located there. And then there's an email also on there already that they can just click that email and send it right to us when it's done.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's good to know. And so the listening audience throughout all of Minnesota, if they're looking for some support of an event that they're hosting coming up, that's the place to go. It doesn't really matter who you know. It's you got to get that form in so it can go through the process. And we'll talk a little bit about that process in just a minute. We're going to take a quick break here, and then we'll come back and we'll get into some of the other standing partnerships and things that that you have going on as the public relations officer. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Radio, I'm your host, Doug Wortham, and in the studio with me, carry over from last segment, is Captain Kristen Ort, and she's the Community Relations Officer for the Minnesota National Guard Public Affairs. And so, Captain Ort, before we went into break, we were just kind of talking a little bit about, you know, some of the events, the forms, that type of a thing. But I'd like to know, what are some of the standing partnerships that you really have in the community, right? So we know there's a ton of relationships, but there are some that are just standing relationships. I'd like to hear a little bit about some of those partnerships that you have.
Yeah, so some of our significant ones are with our actual sports teams, the professional sports teams, the Minnesota Twins, the Minnesota Wild, Minnesota Vikings, Minnesota Timberwolves, and the Minnesota United. So we've had a really good partnership with them where we are able to get our soldiers there to support their events and also attend them in mass groups sometimes, you know, to acknowledge our soldiers and all they've been doing. We also are able to do some family recognition for soldiers when they're deployed, uniting people. So it's been a great way to kind of connect our story with that of with the professional sports teams. And it's really great to see the people's face light up when they're out there, you know, on the ice or on the court, you know, being recognized in front of everybody in the state.
I think that that's a great, you know, neat opportunity for our community to see our soldiers, our airmen out on the field or in the arena or whatever. And so those relationships have been formed over many, many years. And, you know, how does something like that start? I mean, is that where the organization has come to you? Is this something that kind of developed just, you know, happenstance? You know, because it is a great, great partnership to have.
Yeah, so I'm not sure on the whole entire background of it, to be honest. But I know that it is just having the connections within those communities. Whether a service member knows someone that's working full-time with, you know, the Minnesota Wild or with the Minnesota Vikings, and they sort of connect those dots together to build that relationship. And then as the community relations officer, my job is to go in there and maintain those relationships, you know, and see what they need every year. So when it comes time to their season starting, I reach out and be like, hey, what do you guys need from us this year? We're happy to support you.
And I think that, you know, it's important to talk about because I remember a period in time where there was some big controversy about pay to play. And I know because I was serving at the time in the position I had, that was not the case in Minnesota. It's because of the relationships that we've had with these professional teams where they are actually saying, hey, no, we want you here. It's a part of our good doing, if you will. And so, no, we're not getting charged a marketing fee to come out on the field at, say, a Target Field or something like that. That's the Minnesota Twins saying, no, we want you here. And, oh, by the way, please bring X number of, you know, Vietnam veterans or whatever you can do. And so then all that falls onto your plate to start organizing some of that stuff.
Yes, it is part of the whole public affairs team because all those events are just so large scale that it requires our whole team to really, you know, work together to support all these events and make sure we highlight so much of our National Guard and what we're able to do.
And I would imagine that that partnership then goes beyond even those professional sports teams, but then to the other branches of the military that have a presence here in Minnesota as well.
Yes, definitely. I also work hand in hand with a lot of the, we have the Marines reserves here. We have the Naval reserves, Coast Guard reserves are up north in Duluth. So I do reach out to them as well to, you know, get them involved in everything. Joint Color Guards are a great opportunity for us to get all of them involved as well. So they're great to have and to come and support events as well.
So I think that, you know, things like the professional sports events, whether it's a Military Appreciation Day or some other special recognition, I would put those in the category of, hey, those are no-brainers. We're going to support those things because it is good for the organization. It's good for the community. But there has to be a process, though, to screen out a bunch of requests that you either just can't support or may, I don't want to say you don't want to support because we know you can't support everything, but there has to be some way where, you know, you have to be able to say no. And so what does that look like for your organization so that you're not every day doing something and then you never get like other work done?
Yeah, so we use a weekly meeting. It's called our engagement working group. We use it to take in all the requests that come in. And we file them on there. It's on our computer systems to follow, to put everything in there. And we go through with multiple entities across the state, like our J3 personnel, which is our operations group. We have the director of communications on there. So we have all the different entities across the National Guard on there. And we go through each of them and discuss, like, what is being requested, what support is needed, when is the event. And then we also have our legal team review
it as well.
Which
is the big one.
Yes, it is, very much so. We have to make sure we follow the joint ethics regulations. So right. Our legal advisor on that call always ensures, like, this does meet the legal requirements for us to support, or, sorry, unfortunately, this one does not fall within those legal ethics areas. So we cannot support that one.
And so if somebody submitted a request, generally what kind of turnaround can they expect that they would hear, you know, yep, we are still considering, or no, we just can't, or maybe it's been approved already because it's something that was so quick?
Yeah, so if it's one that's more the timeline is sooner to come up, I typically let them know within 2 weeks that I should have an answer, so that it gives us time to get at the memos that we have to utilize to get approval all the way up to the tags level. And so I typically tell them 2 weeks before I reach out to them to let them know whether or not their event is approved. And then if their event is further out, I let them know, like, hey, we appreciate you reaching out. We are going to work this to see if we can find support internally, and I will get back to you, you know, roughly a month out prior to your event. It's just let them know what's happening, and also to connect them with whoever is supporting their event.
Now, we already talked about, you know, from a professional team's perspective, you know, the goodwill, I guess we can call it, about, you know, doing like a military appreciation event or something like that. But from the Minnesota National Guard's perspective, and from your chair as the community relations officer, what do you see as the benefit to the Minnesota National Guard to doing this?
The benefit we get is that we're back in our communities, places where we live, where we serve, where we work on an everyday basis. We're able to get back out there and connect with the people that we see every day and let them know that we're not just, you know, soldiers or airmen.
Yeah.
We are also people. We're here to help. We're here to support you. You know, don't be afraid of us if you see us out in public. We want you to come say hi to us. You know, we're here to, you know, let you know about the military and what we're able to do. But we're also, like, there to, you know, show that we are friends. We're here to, you know, connect that dot between military and communities. We're here to support you.
Yeah, and I think that the slogan, you know, we live here, we work here, we serve here, is such, you know, a great slogan to have for our Minnesota National Guard, because that's exactly what it is. And then to be able to, you know, for example, I go to a lot of Minnesota Wild games, and, you know, from my vantage point, I can always see the service member of the game pretty good. And, you know, and I'm always looking to see, oh, do I know who that is? You know, my wife's giving me the elbow. Do you know who that is? You know, and it's just, it's so neat to see people that we've served with or we know out being recognized for their service. And I think that that's probably a really neat thing for you all as well.
Oh, yes, and it's really fun to hear feedback from people that go and support events. Like, hey, this was, like, the highlight of my career. Like, I've never been able to do something like this before. And, like, they just send thank yous. And the people that we go and support also send a lot of thank you cards, just, you know, happy that we were able to support their events. So we've gotten a lot of positive feedback from our communities that we support, as well as the service members that go and support it, just the good heartfelt feeling that they get after doing it.
So definitely something that the Minnesota National Guard, the Public Affairs Department, is going to continue to move forward with, is keeping you know, our foot out in the community and of course building those relationships. All right, so now I'm going to put you on the spot. We didn't talk about this yet. So you've been in the position for a couple of years. You've had a lot of opportunities to do some pretty cool public relation type things, I'm sure. So what is the one big memorable thing that just pops in your mind that was just so cool that you got to be a part of?
I would have to say that this past year at the state fair, where we did the welcome home for the Vietnam veterans,
Yeah. That
one, just seeing people's reactions, like the veterans as they were coming through into the center area at Dan Patch Park, like some were, you know, crying. They were coming up and saying thank you to service members that were there holding flags, like, just the memory that built, and the fact that, you know, people that came home and never got that thank you, they're seeing it now. And it was just, it was heartfelt. It was amazing.
I have to agree. I was there, and I actually ended up walking with a Vietnam veteran who wasn't very fast, but he made the entire walk. We were like the last ones coming in together. And it was just so cool, because for that, I don't know. I was with him for, let's just say, 10 minutes, and I got to hear his story. And it was just so neat. And yeah, I'm with you. It's events like that where, you know, you can touch somebody's life by saying something as simple as welcome home because they hadn't heard it before. So a lot of great opportunities and great things that you've gotten to do. And I'm sure many more to come in the career that's ahead of you.
Yes, I hope so.
All right. So last thing here as we wrap up, the DD form 2536 is the main form for non-aviation type requests. What's the website we're going to direct people to find out more information if they want to request from the Minnesota National Guard?
Yeah, they can just go to the Minnesota National Guard's page. Go right on there. On the very top banner, there's a bunch of blue little icons up there that say, one of them says, request our support. And you click on that, and it'll bring you right there.
Yeah, Google Minnesota National Guard and go check it out. They want to be in the community. You love being in the community. And then, of course, get your request in early, right?
Oh, yes, please.
Awesome. Well, Captain Ord, I appreciate you coming in, spending some time with us here on Minnesota Military Radio.
Yes, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
That is Captain Kristen Ort. She's the Community Relations Officer for the Minnesota National Guard Public Affairs. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Doug Wortham, and in a moment, we're going to hear about the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs Field Operation Team. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner. This is a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Brad Lindsay.
Located on the Minneapolis Veterans Home campus, the Adult Day Center, known affectionately as the Vets Club, helps veterans live at home for as long as possible. With only a few programs like this across the country, Minnesota veterans can come for 1 to 3 days a week to participate in fun activities with other veterans while their caregivers can rest and recharge. Eligible veterans, spouses, widows, and Gold Star parents can enjoy a unique program that provides much-needed respite to their caregivers. To learn more about the Vets Club, visit MinnesotaVeteran.org.
Thank you, Commissioner Lindsay. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. In the studio with me now is Todd Kabinski. Todd is a United States Army veteran who served as an Assistant County Veteran Service Officer in Hennepin County from 2000 to 2005. He was the Director of Veterans Service in Scott County from 2005 to 2014. Then was the president of the Minnesota Association of County Veterans Service from 2011 to 2012. Served as the National Service Officer with the Wounded Warrior Project from 2014 to 2016. And then finally found his way to the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs in 2016, where he has been serving as a master trainer with the MDVA in the field ops. Todd, that's a long history of service to our veterans and our service members. Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Doug, thanks for having me. Yeah, it's a long time. I'm in my 24th year of advocacy.
24 years of advocacy. And, you know, obviously you started off, you served. So was that when you retired or got out of the military, was that the, you know what, I just love being around these types of people that you just kind of continued? Or what was the story? How did you get into being an advocate for our veterans?
Well, I was bouncing around from one position to another, and I happened to notice the Assistant County Veteran Service Officer position advertised in the paper, so I applied. And I got an interview, and I've always said, if I get an interview, I've got a better than 50% chance of getting the position. I had no experience in advocacy. I had no experience even like social work or where most of the folks come from. But my boss at the time, Mill Schoen, said that I showed the ability to put myself in that veteran's shoes for a minute. And have empathy but not sympathy for the plight of that veteran, and he gave me my shot. And since then, the rest is history. I learned from some great people in Scott County. I learned from one of the most brilliant people in veterans advocacy in the Wounded Warrior Project. Learned more in that year and a half than I did probably my previous 13. And then I was getting tired of commuting from Jacksonville and Kansas City to home. My family didn't want to move. So I saw a position opened up in field operations with the state of Minnesota, and I applied. I got the position, and shortly after starting, they said, we're not appointing you, but we're appointing you. You're going to be the CVSO trainer. And from that point on, it was just myself, using guest speakers. We ended up rewriting the entire curriculum. And then as our program grew, we had to bring on more people. So we brought on John Ecker, who was one of our claims guys, and then Kathy Marshak, who was a Morrison County CBSO. We were able to recruit her as well.
And so when you interviewed for that job with the MDVA, it's not like you didn't already know a group of those people, because as a CVSO, you already have a relationship with MDVA because you're working closely with them for some of the benefits and assistance. So you already had a good working knowledge, obviously, from your CVSO time, and you know that just added to the resume for the opportunity.
It did, and it was one of the easier interviews I had to do because I knew everybody that was sitting across from me. And the commissioner and I actually served together way back in the reserves, so we've known each other for a long time.
Interesting. Well, there you go. So you got your foot in the door, and you're at the MDVA. You've been there since 2016, and you said, so you know, you're the master trainer. You're appointed to be the master trainer, but really, what does that mean for the MDVA? I mean, why do we need to have a master trainer?
Well, MDVA decided that one of their main commitments to the CVSOs, who are our partners in this, is to provide the most training that we could, most quality training. That would be our value to them. And because of that, we decided to take a look at what we have been doing before as far as training, revamp where we needed to, enhance where we needed to, use the good stuff that was still there, and come up with a dynamic training program so that the CVSOs who are coming on board, and there's a lot of them that are in single offices, they have no mentor to show them the ropes. We want to make sure by the time they're done, they at least know what paperwork to fill out and the basics of doing claim work, and more importantly, who to call when they have a question. We also train our own people in field ops, and now we're starting to actually bring in our claims guys to go through our basic training because they're finding some value in that. They don't necessarily do the same things the CVSO does, but there's some overlap, and it gives them an awareness of programs like the SSAP program, which they don't work with.
I think we should probably clarify a little bit. I mean, you're talking about field ops. You're talking about claims people. What's the difference between field ops and claims? And maybe just kind of shed some light on that for me.
Sure. The claims office is there to receive claims from the CVSO, quality control that submission, send it off to the VA along with their own cover sheet with an explanation of the benefits being sought. Also, they are there when the claim gets denied. They're the ones that are going to be representing that claimant to the Board of Veterans Appeals in the appeal process, in the appellate process. Field operations is the force multiplier and the rapid deployment force for the department. We are able to go anywhere in the state, help assist and take a claim. We can actually sit at someone's table in their assisted living facility and help them fill out a claim. We're completely mobile. We can do it all self-contained. We also will help fill in a CVSO office. If that CVSO, let's say, gets deployed, we can actually cover a couple of days in the office so that his veterans don't lose services. We have representation at the hospitals. Stephen Perry's got his group that do claims work in the hospitals and the veterans homes now. So we've expanded our scope and what we can do.
And so just so I'm clear then, a county veteran service officer, which is where we direct people.
Correct.
They will fill out or help the veteran fill out that claim, the packet, and it will still come through the MDVA, and one of the claims reps will look at it and help to then process it or push it forward to the Department of Veterans Affairs.
Right. And there, it's really a quality control function. Hopefully there isn't much for them to do because we've done the training that CVSOs are doing the claims right. And our training not only affects MDVA, but it affects all the service organizations that do claim representation. And I'm in contact with, let's say, John Goen at the BFW, and I ask him, what are you seeing? Are you seeing any problems? How are the submissions? And lately it's been like, Tut, we don't see any problems. Everything's coming through very well. So, all right, good to go.
And so one more time, what is the main difference then between that field ops person, right? If they can't do the claims work, you know, why do we have to have a distinction between the two?
Well, the field operations rep can actually do claims work.
Okay.
They are trained to do that. but they act more like a CVSO in the scope of their operations.
Gotcha.
They can also, they're the only entity outside the CVSOs that can recommend benefits through the State Soldiers Assistance Program.
Gotcha.
Our field ops guys can do that. The CVSOs can, but no one else can. And the reason being is that we're often filling in those offices to do that. The other component that we do is outreach, and we do events. We do my event, which is near and dear to my heart. We got the Donnie Smith custom bike and tattoo show. That's coming. Actually, it's just a custom bike show. Now, that's coming up here in March. We have a table on the main floor. And, you know, 40,000 people through the turnstiles, it's a target-rich environment for veterans. And we do anywhere from 100 to 200 solid contacts every year there.
Yeah, so the claims reps are really specializing on helping with that QC piece of the claim from a CVSO. They can do claims themselves as well. And then that field ops is kind of that well-rounded person that can go out, do some of the targeted stuff. And then more importantly to what you're talking about is some of that outreach stuff. So now you can be on the spot answering questions right there from a live audience.
Yeah, absolutely. And we provide that value to help out with these areas. We try to identify areas where the veterans are underserved. That's how this organization, this division started way back in the day as outreach with a gentleman by the name of Reggie Worlds, who is a former deputy commissioner. He took a flyer on a two-year pilot program to do outreach, and it blossomed into field ops, so we have today. And full disclosure, Reggie and I worked together at Hennepin County. We've been great friends since then, so.
Well, that's a great note to end on right here for this segment. We'll take a quick break, then we'll come back and we'll talk a little bit more about, you know, some of the good news stuff that you get to do and you get to experience. We're speaking with Todd Kabinski from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Doug Wortham, and I've got Todd Kabinski in the studio with me, who works with the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs on the training. He's the master trainer for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. And Todd, you've had obviously a great career of advocacy, and I'm sure that you've been able to do a lot of neat things as far as helping some of our service members. And I'm just wondering if there's some story or something that is really just sticks out in your mind as it relates to some veteran or somebody that you've been able to help or serve.
Oh, yeah. All of us have the stories we like to tell. And we are one of the few positions in government where we actually have a tangible outcome for the work that we do. And that's it's not always good news, but in most cases it is if we're doing our job right. And even something as simple as getting a World War II veteran service-connected for hearing loss and tinnitus, and now he can get hearing aids, and he hears his granddaughter for the first time. It's pretty powerful stuff. One claim that I'm particularly proud of, it was with the Wounded Warrior Project. And it was a veteran who wanted to reach out to us. We had done a briefing at an event that they did. And she had been assaulted when she was at the Air Force Academy. And she wasn't sure she wanted to file the claim. She didn't think anybody would believe her, even though it was reported. So I convinced her after a couple of times, let's do the claim, we'll take care of you. And I looked at her claim in the system. We were able to read the VA's mail, by the way. That's one of the few things that we're able to do is in the state is read their mail. And it looked like the claim was ready for a decision. Well, that doesn't go that fast. So there's no claim that gets done in 30 days. So I looked at the notes, and they were going to deny the claim because the raider had said that she wasn't on active duty because she was at the academy. Hmm. Well, that is active duty service for claims purposes. Trust me, I know that. So I sent a copy of that CFR to that raider directly. She sent it to her boss for an opinion. The long and the short of it is she got an exam right away after that, and then within a month she was rated at 100% PMT, and she got validation for what she went through. And I tell you, if I hadn't checked, you know, and that's some of the things that we teach. Check your claims frequently because you can head off disasters before they happen. Had I not checked on that claim and had been adjudicated, I would never have been able to get that veteran back. And you know, those are just some of the best practices that we teach our CVSOs. We also teach them that we're going to write this claim for the Board of Appeals. We'll package it for the regional office, but we're writing it as if we're addressing the board, because what you do is based in law.
Yeah.
And we all give a little of ourselves to every claim we do. If you're a good CVSO, good claims rep, you're going to do that, because that's that spend a day in the shoes of that veteran. You have to do that, mm-hmm. that empathy piece. But we have to be able to interpret that and put it into the context of the law. And part of our basic training is that, is how to write this so that this story becomes a legal claim to the VA.
Yeah. And I would imagine that, you know, it takes a little bit of time, right? I mean, to get used to the type of writing that you have to use, of the language, the words. But, you know, over time, that gets a little bit easier, a little bit easier. And the big thing here is you're trying to identify and provide what the veteran, the service member, is entitled to. We're not making stuff up. It's what happened. What is a legitimate claim? Let's get that on paper and let's push it forward.
Right. Everything is evidence-based. The three things that I have to prove on a claim is in-service event, that it actually happened in the service, that you have a chronic condition now, and that there's a relationship between that event and service and the chronic condition called the nexus. That's in law. I can't work any way around that. That has to happen. Once you have that structure in mind, then claims work becomes easy, because that's your building blocks. If you address those three areas of the claim when you do the write-up for your veteran and send it forward, you have a better than average chance of getting that claim through.
All right. So we've got just a couple of seconds here. County Veteran Service Officer, first stop. That's where we should go. And someone can reach out to the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs as well if they needed to, right?
Absolutely. If you don't know who your CVSO is, go to macvso.org. There's a Find Your CVSO button on there, and you'll find them. Otherwise, you can give our office a call at 612-970-5662.
Todd, I appreciate you spending some time with us on Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks, Doug. Thanks for having me.
That's Todd Kabinski. He's a master trainer for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Joining us now is the president of the Minnesota Association of County Veteran Service Officers and the Lacaparle County Veteran Service Officer, Josh Abeniga. Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
It's always good to be on here, Doug.
Thanks. Hey, Josh, you know, I apologize. We've only got a short amount of time here, but I had Todd Kabinski on the show here just before you, and, you know, he's not afraid to talk, so he used up a little bit of your time, but that's okay. We had some good stuff to get out about the MDVA. So I want to maximize your time, and you know what? The legislative season has just kicked off, and I know that you work very closely with the Commander's Task Force, and, of course, all of your CVSOs. You've got some things on the docket and some legislative initiatives that you'd like to work with. So why don't you tell us a little bit about what's on the docket for you all moving in this legislative season?
Sure thing, Doug. And, yeah, I totally understand about Todd Kabinski. He was blessed with the gift of gab, so that's totally fine if I'm cut short. One thing we want to see that's been coming about in the last couple of years is a passing of a Clean Veterans Omnibus Bill. 2023 session produced a second Veterans Military and Omnibus Bill in this action to separate our legislations, become a Minnesota precedent. We don't want to step backward, and this should be a regular expectation, similar to an ag bill, a tax bill, or a transportation bill. So that's one of the first priorities we want to see.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's extremely important. Just keep the politics out of it. Let's do a clean bill.
Yes. Veterans, you know, deserve to have a clean bill and not a footnote in another bill. So we also like to see some expansion of and modernization of the homestead market value exclusion. Maybe get some of those dollar amounts raised up to coincide with the inflation in the last few years. I don't think those numbers have been touched in quite a while, and home values have gone pretty high lately, so we'd like to see that increased. A couple of clerical things we would like to see, vital record documents. There's a list of people who can obtain those at no cost, which includes service officers of that are accredited with congressionally chartered organizations. County veteran service officers are, but the wording is a little inconspicuous, so we'd like to see County Veteran Service Officer included on that list. Another one that's specific to our CVSOs is to allow counties to appropriate funding for Veterans Day programs. As it stands now, counties can set aside funding in their budgets for Memorial Day ceremonies, and we'd like to expand that to also have money go towards Veterans Day services as well. So,
well, that's interesting. That's not something that would already be included in that, but probably a pretty easy thing to sell, I would assume, right?
Well, we already have a meeting with the committee taking place in a week or two, so that's a very good sign that I think it's one of those easy passes, or we're hoping it's an easy pass as well.
All right. Well, Josh, we're at that time, and, you know, you got a couple of big things on the list there, and I just want to wish you best of luck as you move through that and garner the support that you need to make those things happen.
I appreciate that, Doug, and I thank you for the time.
You bet. That's Josh Benega. He is the Minnesota Association County Veteran Service Officers President and the Lacaparo County Veteran Service Officer. We're about out of time. I'd like you to know that this show is for you. If you have a topic suggestion, if you have some show feedback, or if you're a Minnesota veteran, you'd like to have your story shared with us, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com, click Contact Us, send us a message. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Captain Kristen Ort, Todd Kabinski, Josh Benega, Commissioner Brad Lindsay of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Sean Mankey. Please join us next week when we learn about the Eagle Group of Minnesota Veterans and talk to the State Commander of the Jewish War Veterans. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Doug Wortham. I'd like to thank you for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I hope you have a great week and you find a way to make a positive impact on someone's life.
Minnesota Military Radio is a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, and the Minnesota National Guard. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phelan Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is a life member of the American Legion, VFW, Vietnam Veterans of America, and the DAV. For podcasts and the latest updates, follow us at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.